Good evening. As a global climate strike spearheaded by youth approaches, young people take their pleas for action to Congress.
I don't want you to listen to me. I want you to listen to the scientists. And I want you to unite behind the science. And then I want you to take real action. Thank you.
And President Trump introduces his new national security advisor. Is he John Bolton Light? With these and other stories, I'm Paul D'Arienzo with the news for Wednesday, September 18th, 2019. New York City youth climate leaders say they're striking on Friday, September 20th, to demand action on the climate crisis from elected officials and institutions across the globe. Friday is the second anniversary of Hurricane Maria and kicks off a week of action for climate justice in New York City and in 120 countries around the world. Hurricane Maria was a deadly Category 5 hurricane that devastated Dominica, the U.S. Virgin Islands, and Puerto Rico in September 2017. It's regarded as the worst natural disaster in recorded history to affect those islands. In New York, the rally will begin Friday at noon in Foley Square, but in Washington, D.C., climate activists appear on Capitol Hill to make the point before members of Congress. Greta Thunberg, the young Swedish climate activist who started the climate strike movement, made a short opening statement.
I don't want you to listen to me. I want you to listen to the scientists. And I want you to unite behind the science. And then I want you to take real action.
Several other young people who are organizers behind the lawsuit titled Juliana versus United States also addressed the representatives.
My name is Jamie Margolin, and I'm a 17-year-old climate justice activist from Seattle, Washington. I'm missing a lot of school to be here. It's my senior year of high school. I have college application deadlines looming over me, and to be honest, I've barely even started because I'm too busy fighting to make sure that I'm actually going to have the future I'm applying to study for. You're here spending a few moments with me, but that is nothing compared to the hours that members of Congress have spent with lobbyists from corporations that make billions of dollars off of the destruction of my generation's future. I want the entirety of Congress, in fact, the whole U.S. government, to remember the fear and despair that my generation lives with every day, and I want you to hold on to it. How do I even begin to convey to you what it feels like to know that within my lifetime, the destruction that we have already seen from the climate crisis will only get worse? What adds insult to injury is the fact that we keep getting promised what isn't there. On college applications, I keep getting asked, what do you want to be when you grow up? The media, pop culture, businesses, and the whole world tells me that I and my whole generation will have something to look forward to that we just don't. You're promising me lies. Everyone who will walk up to me after this testimony saying that I have such a bright future ahead of me will be lying to my face. It doesn't matter how talented we are. It doesn't matter how much work we put in, how many dreams we have. The reality is, my generation has been committed to a planet that is collapsing. The fact that you are staring at a panel of young people testifying before you today, pleading for a livable Earth, should not fill you with pride. It should fill you with shame. Youth climate activism should not have to exist. We are exhausted because we have tried everything. We've built organizations, organized marches, and worked on political campaigns. I sued my state government in a lawsuit called Piper versus the State of Washington, along with 12 other plaintiffs, for contributing to the climate crisis and denying my generation's constitutional rights to life, liberty, and property. The lawsuit is also arguing that the natural resources of my state are protected as a right under the Washington State Constitution. The shellfish, salmon, orcas, and all of the beautiful wildlife of my Pacific Northwest home is dying due to ocean acidification caused by the climate crisis, and communities all over Seattle are suffering from the new fossil fuel infrastructure being built to lock in decades more of climate destruction into my state. My friends and I were warned to stay inside the last two summers because our city was shrouded in a suffocating smoke from wildfires. It gave me such bad headaches for so long, and my friends with respiratory illnesses had to go to the ER. Is this the future that we have to look forward to? Well, we the youth are working as hard as we can to make sure that it isn't. On July 21st of 2018, after an entire year of nonstop organizing, despite being full-time high school students with a lot of homework to do, my organization, Zero Hour, marched on Washington, D.C. in a pouring rainstorm and in 25 cities around the world, demanding urgent climate action from you and all of our leaders. And that was only the beginning. But by 2030, We will know if we have created the political climate that will have allowed us to salvage life on Earth, or if we acted too late.
One of the central arguments used to counter climate activism is that other countries, not just the United States, are refusing to take action. The point was rebutted by the children.
The United States must lead by example. And despite recent emissions reductions, the United States is currently the second highest emitting country in the world annually. And although we rank number two now, the United States is responsible for the most carbon pollution accumulated in the atmosphere. Some people say that the United States should not dramatically reduce our emissions because China and other countries aren't doing enough. I'd like to have your view on that and have each of the witnesses comment on that briefly.
I think that's a false approach because we've never in history looked at a problem that we contribute in the United States and said, well, if it's happening somewhere else, then we shouldn't fix it. So I don't think that that's a reasonable excuse. But I also do think it's important to note that other countries are emitting and that we must hold them accountable as we hold ourselves accountable. America has led on lots of initiatives in the past. You have people in Hong Kong waving their flags and singing the American national anthem right now because we inspire them. We can do the same thing on climate change.
What you said is totally correct. The United States contributes to 25% of historic emissions in the world. And if we are the country that we say we are, if we're the leaders that we say we are, we need to lead by example here and work on our what we're doing here so that the rest of the world can follow our lead.
When your children ask you, did you do absolutely everything in your power to stop the climate crisis, when the storms are getting worse and we're seeing all of the effects of the climate crisis, when they ask you, did you do everything? Can you really look them in the eye and say, no, sorry, I couldn't do anything because that country over there didn't do anything, so if they're not going to do it, then I'm not. That is shameful, and that is cowardly. And there is no excuse to not take action, to not improve how as much as we can in the United States. And how can we call ourselves the city on a hill an example for the world if we're going to be cowards and hide behind waiting for other people, saying that I'm not going to do this because they didn't. I want you to think about, this is all about being able to look your children in the eye and say, I did absolutely everything I could for you. I know that we're up against a lot of pressure. I know that the time is running out. But like my honey, however you call your kids, I did everything I could. And so I just don't understand, as a parent, how can you look your kid in the eye and say, there is this impending crisis. Everything is at stake. But I stood back and I didn't really do anything. I didn't take action. I didn't act like it was an emergency because our neighbors over there weren't doing it. So I'm just not going to. How can you tell your children that?
I think I don't need to add anything, but just another perspective. I am from Sweden. It's a small country. And there it is the same argument. Why should we do anything? Just look at the U.S., they say. So just so you know, that is being used against you as well.
And a 19-year-old climate activist in New York, Shiv Sohn, says the climate strike is about the future of our planet.
The global climate strike that's happening on Friday. It's in preparation essentially for the UN General Assembly summit that's happening. We're fighting for just our future of our planet. So we have three main demands. Those are, one, no more fossil fuels, two, a just transition, and three, holding our fossil fuel executives accountable. So really spreading that message and holding our politicians accountable.
What do you expect to achieve by this strike? What will it do?
We're really looking forward to actually getting our voices out. This is a movement that has been led by young people, but it's still an intergenerational movement. We have a lot of people who are older than us and younger than us that are coming to strike. Bringing together the solidarity while showing our message is super crucial, and that's what we're really excited about.
Is this happening in more than one location? Is it happening around the world at different locations?
This is happening in New York City. If you're here in New York City on Friday, September 20th at 12 o'clock, we'll be assembling at Foley Square and marching down to Battery Park. If you are not in New York City, you can go on strikewithus.org or globalclimatestrike.net, and you'll be able to find a strike near you. It's happening in over 100 countries, and there are hundreds of strikes going on throughout the United States.
Can you tell us how the idea of a global strike began?
This was first inspired by climate activist Greta Thunberg in when she started striking outside the Swedish parliament last year. And the youth were involved in this movement, but in the last year, we've really seen this explode. After Greta started her strikes, this movement, Fridays for Future, really began to manifest. Now, we are seeing these global climate strikes develop as a result of that. So there have been two major global climate strikes already. This is the third one, and this won't be the last one.
In New York City, the Department of Education has said that it's willing to forgive students who cut out of class early. Is that true?
Yeah, so we've actually been working on that for months to make sure the Department of Education makes this strike accessible to everybody in New York City. For students, that means actually granting them amnesty on September 20th. So if you are a student in New York City and you are interested in coming down to strike, you miss class, as long as you have parental consent, this will not count against your attendance, which is crucial for bringing frontline communities into this conversation.
Have you been doing outreach at the schools in New York?
We actually have a school rep system going on. So if you are, depending on what school you are, we have a few people organizing at these schools at the granular level, really, and making sure that everybody within schools knows exactly what's happening.
Using social media and things like that?
We have our main strike Instagram here in New York City. It's called FFS.NYC. So if you guys want to follow that, that'd be great. We are posting a lot of updates here in New York City. And, we're making sure that everybody gets the word out, and social media has been extremely powerful in doing that.
Have you met Greta?
I have met Greta, actually. So I was, me and a few of my friends were some of the lead organizers for the past few weeks of the UN, the strikes. I was really fortunate to actually talk to Greta there. So she's a really nice person. I'm really glad she's in this fight with us.
Where do you go to school?
I am a second-year student at NYU right now.
Great. What are you majoring in?
I'm majoring in politics and economics.
Do you feel you're getting hands-on training in that now?
I'm getting hands-on training through this. I really, I'm always a believer of the saying, don't let your education get in the way of your learning. And this is how you learn, by actually doing these things. It's a lot of hard work that comes from a lot of us. There is a lot of the majority of our organizers are high school students, and we all are making so many sacrifices and working overtime to actually be able to express our voices and express our passions. I'm more than happy to make the choice that I've made. I'm more than happy to work so much harder to make sure that we actually have a livable planet, so that the work that I'm doing in school doesn't go to waste in a few years.
All right, great. Anything like to add?
Yeah, I just want to plug in the strike details one more time. If you are in New York City on September 20th, please come down to Foley Square at 12 o'clock. If you are a New York City student in the K-12 system, you are granted amnesty. So you please do come down to Foley Square at 12 o'clock. We have a lot of speakers, a lot of performers. We just announced Jaden and Willow Smith will be performing too. So that's a lot of fun. Please come down. We'll be marching from Foley Square to Battery Park at 12 o'clock. We're assembling, and it's going to go all the way to 5 o'clock.
And that's 19-year-old climate activist Shiv Sohn. And you're listening to the news on WBAI Pacifica Radio in New York. I'm Paul DiRienzo. Today, President Trump named Robert C. O'Brien, who has served as the U.S. hostage negotiator, as his new national security advisor, replacing the ousted John Bolton. President Trump made the announcement himself.
Well, thank you very much. We're with Robert O'Brien, who, as you know, is the new national security advisor. He's worked with me for quite a while now on hostages, and we've had a tremendous track record with respect to hostages. Robert can tell you about it, but we brought a lot of people back home, and we haven't spent any money. So that's good, because you can't do the money thing. If you do the money thing, all of a sudden, it'll double and triple and quadruple. You say, what's going on? So Robert's been fantastic. We know each other well. Maybe Robert, say a few words, please.
Great. Thank you. Look, it's a privilege to serve with the president. And we look forward to another year and a half of peace through strength. We've had tremendous foreign policy successes under President Trump's leadership. I expect those to continue. We've got a number of challenges, but there's a great team in place with Secretary Pompeo and Secretary Esper, Secretary Mnuchin, and others. I look forward to working with them and working with the president to keep America safe and continue to rebuild our military and really get us back to a peace through strength posture that'll keep the American people.
And that was President Trump announcing the new National Security Advisor. Kurt Mill is senior writer for American Conservative Magazine. He says O'Brien is Bolton light.
It's a curious choice if you believe that the reason that Bolton was ousted was policy differences. And I think the policy differences matter. But I think it was also kind of classic Trump, where he has a disagreement over policy with somebody. He ousts that person. And then he falls in love with the next girl that comes along. I mean, Trump he deals mano a mano, person to person. Him and O'Brien have a rapport, and he went with him.
What does this mean for policy? You said it's going to hand more power over to Pompeo. Is that the thing? Is he becoming like people have been calling him Kissinger, the new Kissinger?
A, there was some speculation that Pompeo himself could become the National Security Advisor at the same time as being Secretary of State, which has not been done since Kissinger did it for Nixon in the second term. But in general, Pompeo is probably strengthened here. We don't know what Brian's going to do yet. But in general, a weak NSA is usually, National Security Advisor that is usually good for the Secretary of State or the Secretary of Defense or both. Now, O'Brien may surprise, but the current read is that, obviously this is a less fiery operator than Mr. Bolton was, Ambassador Bolton was.
We have major foreign policy events occurring, especially in the Persian Gulf. Everybody's been saying that Bolton's removal was a step back from the brink, especially since these attacks. It seems like the Trump administration has his policy already set as far as his take on the world. If he wants to attack somebody, he's been saying over and over again, he doesn't need much of a reason. I mean, on his first week in Afghanistan, he dropped the biggest bomb ever, as if right. That was while he was negotiating with the people he was bombing right. At the same time. So what will we see with O'Brien? More of this kind of, I'll be generous, strange approach to foreign policy? Or
yeah, I think O'Brien's a hawk. If you want to read what O'Brien thinks about the world, read his opus, his magnum opus, which is called While America Slept, which was released shortly before the election 3 years ago. This is somebody who believes that America, under Barack Obama particularly, retreated from the world. This is a person who believes that America, this is not somebody who's quibbling with, in my view, American, what I view as American overextension overseas. This is pretty run-of-the-mill, standard-line, hawkish Republican. No surprises.
And in that way, he's different in the sense that his predecessor was had a real strong agenda in mind that mm-hmm. he's been promoting for many years that's not necessarily the Republican agenda.
Yeah, I mean, I would say the difference between Bolton and O'Brien is that Bolton is an utter fanatic. I'm not even sure some of his supporters would necessarily disagree with that. I would say, though, it's not like O'Brien is not fairly forceful. I mean, this is somebody who I do not think would hesitate to advise the president to use military force pretty quickly, and I think the immediate theaters. He's being seen as a China hawk, Asia expert, but right now on offer is Iran. The president, before he tweeted out that O'Brien was hired today, he tweeted out that he's instructing Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary, to sanction Iran further. That's the hot zone right now, right? Mm-hmm. Iran, Yemen, Saudi Arabia, Israel with the election, the Middle East, whether like it or not, it's the hot zone, the Middle East yet again. And I think the president's instincts on Iran are a little bit different than the Republican foreign policy establishment, because his instinct is to negotiate, his instinct is just to settle it. That being said, he's very against Obama's nuclear deal, and I think he's quite pliable to people who tell him that, the Iranians are insulting you, and you have to respond forcefully. And he got really close to a military strike on the regime in June before pulling out literally last minute. To be determined what's going to happen here. I would draw the parallel with Bolton, O'Brien's ascension with Bolton on this score. When Bolton got in April 2018, immediately on offer was a Syrian chemical weapons attack, and Trump responded. And now there is new something going on in the Middle East, and Trump could very well respond with a strike to inaugurate Mr. O'Brien's tenure at the NSC.
Is this guy more of an obsequious type who's going to just kowtow to anything Trump wants, or is he actually going to try and tell Trump to do things?
Trump said today on the tarmac that they have a relationship. This is somebody who was not pro-Trump during the campaign, to be frank, or at least the primary campaign, and unclear his record during the general. He wants this job. Being National Security Advisor is a major job. He took the job. Everybody knows, the game with Trump is you got to show a fair amount of respect and deference. Trump knows this is his fourth National Security Advisor. I don't think he wants a fifth, at least before the election. They're going to try to make it work, but to be determined.
Kurt Mill is senior writer for American Conservative Magazine. And that's some of the news for Wednesday, September 18th, 2019. The news was produced with Linda Perry. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson. For the WBAI Evening News, I'm Paul DiRienzo.